This is the Quality News Network. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli airstrikes continue today. More than 30 targets have been hit. The Palestinian Prime Minister claims that Israel's offensive is part of a premeditated plan to take down the Hamas-led government. Israel has also reportedly kidnapped and arrested 8 cabinet members and 50 other Hamas officials. Israel says it is increasing the pressure to free an Israeli soldier who was kidnapped earlier this week in a cross-border raid. In Baghdad, the U.S. Army is investigating the deaths of 4 Iraqi civilians in a town south of Baghdad in March. One of the 5 accused soldiers has reportedly been arrested after admitting his role in the incident. The other 4 soldiers have been confined to a base and their weapons have been taken away. Also in Iraq, the Prime Minister will leave tomorrow for his first trip abroad with stops in Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait. The tour is part of a plan to promote his national reconciliation to curb sectarian violence. Osama bin Laden has reportedly released an internet audio tape praising Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the al-Qaeda in Iraq leader, who was killed by U.S. forces earlier this month. He also vowed that al-Qaeda would continue to fight the U.S. and its allies everywhere. USA Today reports that the NSA phone call database is not as widespread as first reported last month. Today, the newspaper said that Verizon and Bell South deny that they provided customer phone records to the National Security Agency, as the paper had earlier claimed. In Washington, the Bush administration may not meet its goal of placing 2,500 National Guardsmen on the U.S.-Mexico border by today's scheduled deadline. Reports from military officials in the 4 states say that fewer than 1,000 troops are in place. However, the National Guard head insists that that goal would be met by today, and he disputes that tally. In Memphis, Tennessee today, President Bush and the First Lady took visiting Japanese Prime Minister to the Elvis Presley home in Graceland. The Japanese Prime Minister, who is leaving office in September, has been one of the President's strongest supporters in world affairs. The United States is insisting that Iran respond to the Western incentives offer to halt its nuclear program by the deadline of next week. Iranian officials insist that they need more time to reply. And in Kuwait, the parliamentary election results show that no woman won any seat. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Commerce Department reports that consumer spending slowed in May. The government report cites rising gasoline prices as the reason for the slowdown. However, the University of Michigan survey of consumer sentiment shows an increase in June. The report reveals a higher than expected gain for the month. President Bush has nominated a Columbia University professor to serve on the Federal Reserve. A Medicaid rule that goes into effect tomorrow requires that a person must prove their citizenship, for example, by showing a passport or birth certificate, before applying or re-enrolling for benefits. An estimated 50 million poor Americans will be affected by the rule, which is aimed at cutting fraud by illegal immigrants. Drug maker Bayer says it will sell its diagnostic operations to Siemens in a more than $5 billion deal. Pending approval, it is expected to close in early 2007. The FDA has granted approval for the first generic version of the top-selling antidepressant Zoloft. An Israeli pharmaceutical company plans to make the generic version of the Pfizer drug, whose patent expires tomorrow. Microsoft has announced it will cut about 5% of its sales force to boost its competitiveness. However, the company plans to hire an additional 66 sales workers, and those who have been cut can apply for the new positions. Lake Sweet crude is trading at $73.93, and on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is down 12 points, the Nasdaq down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, me pride.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome to the program, everyone. It's Friday afternoon, and this means that, and right before a holiday weekend, for those of you who are, going places or planning on going places this weekend, please be safe and careful and do the driving that you need to do. Just, don't be a nut like me and drive 80,000 miles an hour. I'm really happy that we finally made it through to Friday here, and we're, at the end of a week, which means that we've got a lot of stuff on tap today. I try to make the Friday show as entertaining as possible. I try to make every show as entertaining as possible, but Friday is always the day that I try to make it even more so. Now, I haven't, for some reason, I haven't been able to confirm Wayne Madsen for today, but hopefully he'll be on a little bit later. If not, we'll get with him next week. I do have, however, a couple of really interesting guests for today. The first guest is a lady named Nadine Smith, and she is the executive director of Equality Florida, and serves. She has been the executive director of that organization since 1997. She's going to be on to tell us about what her organization does in Florida, as well as talk about a website called Know Thy Neighbor. Okay, and then later on in the program, we will have Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who was the second chair behind Neil Talyuk in the Hamdan case that was announced yesterday by the Supreme Court. So he is he's a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy, was assigned as defense counsel to Salim Ahmed Hamdan, who reportedly was Osama bin Laden's limo driver. But anyway, he was assigned to the case that actually was decided yesterday, in which the Supreme Court struck down the Gitmo military of tribunals and said that they needed to follow the Geneva Conventions. So we'll talk to him later on today. That should be a really interesting interview, a really interesting conversation, if you will. That'll be later on in the show, about an hour from now. So, we're going to be doing that. If you just to do the normal stuff that I try to do every show. Ben Birch is having a fundraiser over the White Rose Society website. Go to whiterosesociety.org if you want to download any of the Head On Radio Network programs. And while you're there, click on the donate button and shoot him a few bucks if you get the chance. He could really use it, and all it does is serve to continue with the programming that we do here and that he does there. Ben also streams all of our programs through his online streaming service. So I don't take the chance often enough to say to Ben, dude, I really appreciate you. Now, Ben is not any relation to me, at least that we're aware of, although Birch is an interesting last name. It's not a very common last name, but it is out there. So just to Ben, a little private message, my friend. You do a great job. Thank you for everything you're doing, and please keep up the good work. We need you. Also, we're chatting in the Head On Radio Network chat room. Go to headonradionetwork.com, and you can click on live chat, and that'll get you into a little area where you can register your name and password and et cetera, and that'll get you right into the chat room where most of the time, at this time of the day, people are chatting about the radio program. And there's a few folks in there who are hanging out, so do go and check that out. Now, if you want to get in on the show, really briefly, we've got a few minutes before we go into our interviews. Between now and 5:30, you can get in on the radio program, 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. And that'll get you right into the studios in West Virginia and then online, on the air, live with me. A lot of interesting stuff going on today. You know, the folks up in the Senate, they're just livid. They can't believe that the Supreme Court actually said to the president, "Mr. President, we think what you did was wrong." They can't believe that somebody actually took a chance and said, and they can't believe it, that those five justices stood up and said, "This is wrong." It blows their mind. So they're right now in a frenetic frenzy, trying to figure out how to deal with the fact that the government's been operating an illegal concentration camp in Cuba. Now, according to a story from rawstory.com, senators are moving right now to reverse the effects of the Supreme Court decision against Guantanamo commissions. Senators on Capitol Hill are already moving to undercut yesterday's Supreme Court ruling that military tribunals being held at Guantanamo Bay are illegal. The Supreme Court ruled 5-3 in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, and we will have one of the attorneys on the show later, that the commissions created by a November 2001 military order to try suspected terrorists and their co-conspirators were not authorized by Congress and violated the Uniform Court of Military Justice and the laws of war as enunciated in the 4 Geneva Conventions. But in a concurring opinion, Justice Stephen Breyer noted, quote, "Nothing prevents the president from returning to Congress to seek the authority he believes necessary," end quote. President, I hate to call him president because he's more like a country club executive director. George Bush observed, quote, that certain senators have already been out expressing their desire to address what the Supreme Court found, and we will work with the Congress, end quote. And of course, the Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and John Kyle of Arizona, noting Breyer's opinion, declared their intention to, quote, pursue legislation in the Senate granting the executive branch the authority to do whatever in the hell it ever wants to do ever. I'm sorry, that was my own editorial opinion. To pursue legislation in the Senate granting the executive branch the authority to ensure that terrorists can be tried by competent military commissions. The same two senators, along with Democrat Carl Levin of Michigan, took similar action in response to the Supreme Court's 2004 decision in Rasul versus Bush. The resulting Graham-Levin-Kyle amendment, incorporated in the Detainees Treatment Act of 2005, which I'm sure had a signing statement attached that said, "I'm not going to follow this law," denied Guantanamo detainees the right to avail themselves of any federal court, effectively stripping the federal judiciary of jurisdiction over the detainees. Now, let me ask a question here. I don't want to get off in a rant too quick into the program. Actually, I really, 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 really do. I don't want to get off into a rant too early in the program, but how in the hell can the legislative branch of government strip another branch of government of any kind of power? That is totally, totally, totally not okay. All right, Now we have the legislative branch stripping the judicial branch of any jurisdiction over the detainees. We have George Bush, on the other hand, saying, "I am God and no one can mess with me." And Dick Cheney's going, "I didn't mean to shoot that man." Meanwhile, we have folks down in Guantanamo Bay that are committing suicide, and the military commanders are claiming that these people committing suicide are doing that in an act of, I can't remember, but it was an act of war. I'm trying to think of the right terminology that was used by that, glorified prison guard down there. I'm trying to think of his name, too. I can't think of that either. You know, it's like I can't remember a name when someone really disgusts me. I forget their names. But at any rate, they claimed that it was an act of war. Claimed it was an act of war that these guys are killing themselves. I'll show you. I'll kill me. Well, you know, 2 or 4 years on, 5 years on perhaps for some of these people, or getting close to it anyway, 4.5 years on, some of these guys are a little despondent, and well, they should be. You know, if I were facing life imprisonment and never, ever once was able to plead my case before anybody and say, you know, you got the wrong guy, I think I'd be a little despondent myself. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm a liberal. I don't know anything about anything. Okay. Actually, we're going to go out to a break, but before we do that, we're going to listen to a little bit of audio that my producer says we need to listen to. Go ahead and run that, Agnes.
So many influential guests here tonight. Justice Scalia. Justice Alito.
Yeah, all the usual suspects. Speaking of suspects, where's the great white hunter?
I am sorry Vice President Cheney couldn't be here tonight. I agree with the press that Dick was a little late reporting that hunting episode down in Texas. In fact, I didn't know a thing about it till I saw him on America's Most Wanted.
Cheney, what a goofball. Shot the only trial lawyer in the country who's for me. I tell you, you reporters would go nuts if you knew the true story. He was as drunk as a skunk. On one beer. Light beer. Oh, people were ducking and diving for cover. I wish I could have been there. I saw him walking down the hallway the other day. I looked at him and said, "Don't shoot." You see, people don't see the fun side of Dick.
But Dick's a good man. He has a good heart. Well, he's a good man. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm feeling chipper tonight. I survived the White House shakeup.
He survived the White House shakeup. Yeah, well, let's just tell you, George, one little thing. I don't think the White House shakeup is over just yet. Let's wait till after the November elections to announce that, shall we? You listen to the Bruce Burch Radio Program, Radio for a Free America, being brought to you on the Head On Radio Network. Happy Friday, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Thank you. Place your hand on your heart. Measure the beats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how long it takes to protect your child's life. 5 heartbeats. That's how long it takes to learn about the dangers of pesticides that could be found in your child's classroom. Asthma, lower IQ scores, and cancer have all been linked to prolonged exposure to these toxins. But if you knew there were toxin-free alternatives to pesticides, if you knew you had a voice regarding their use, if you knew you could take action that would make your child's classroom safe today, wouldn't you do something? In a heartbeat. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
You're back on the Bruce Birch Radio program, Radio for a Free America, and I'm just being told in the chat room, in the headonradionetwork.com chat room, our good friend Benedict at large is telling me that he searched all the signing statements for 2004 to 2006, and it does not appear that Bush issued a signing statement for the Detainees Treatment Act of 2005, which denied Guantanamo detainees the right to avail themselves of any federal court, effectively stripping the federal judiciary of jurisdiction over the detainees. And thank you, Benedict, for that wonderful information about that. Yeah, well, you know, and I guess I just got to tell you, you know, based on the information that I'm reading about the law, I can see why, because he probably, you know, his guys probably wrote it, I would imagine. You know, anyway. All right, we're going to go over to the phones real quick and take care of a phone call before we get off into our extended conversations with our guests And our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location in the Northern Hemisphere is with us. Jim, how are you doing this afternoon?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm doing better than I deserve, my friend.
Well, I hope things are doing well in God's little half acre down there and your big poot. And I wish all of you a happy 4th of July.
Well, thank you.
Just a few comments, and I know that you've got a full agenda this afternoon, brevity being the soul of wit. You know, first things, as far as struggles between the respective branches of government, you know, we had a problem with the Congress trying to overwhelm the presidency after Lincoln was shot with Reconstruction back in the 1860s, and it was a virtual dictatorship by the so-called Black Republicans. That's one instance in which that happened. And then, of course, FDR tried to pack the Supreme Court by adding four additional justices back in 1936, which didn't quite work. So I guess this is kind of business as usual, Bruce. You know what I'm saying? Historically speaking.
Sure. Well, and I totally, you know, I think if we don't learn lessons from the past, we're destined to repeat it. And that may be what's happening right now.
Hope so. And I certainly hope that they can shut that mess down in Cuba. That's a disgrace. That's just a carbuncle on the ass of humanity, excuse me, or a wart on the face of humanity, depending on your point of view of the thing. And by the way, did you see Bush and the Japanese, I don't know what you want to call him, what do you call those Japanese crime bosses? I can't think of the term.
Yakuza? I think it's Yakuza, isn't it?
The big Yakuza or whatever, or the Jacuzzi, yeah. Whatever you want to call this. Did you see him in Graceland?
I did not. I have been rushing around all day like a madman, so I haven't had a chance to read the...
It was just... First, have you ever been to Graceland or Graceland?
No, I haven't. I've been to Memphis, but I've never been to Graceland, no.
Well, with all due respect to Elvis, and he did a lot of good work, but taste and decorating I don't think was really his forte, and I don't think that place would be an architectural digest. I have never in my life seen such a place when I saw it. But to see those two together and that Japanese Yakuza or whatever with that long Elvis-type hair, he even had his hair like Elvis, and seeing him had him in a loop, you know, where they just kept repeating the thing, and it looked like something out of Max Sennett's Keystone Cops. It was just hilarious. And then they were describing what they ate and all this kind of stuff, and of course I was sitting here with the thing of Imitrol. Too early for Johnny Walker, but anyway, for nausea. But I just couldn't believe it. I mean, how much money they spent taking this guy to get him down to Graceland, and then they bought him a jukebox filled with Elvis records. Isn't that just wonderful?
Well, and apparently, I'm reading here that Priscilla and Lisa Marie both showed up.
Well, where was Michael?
Oh, well, you know where he was.
Jackson.
You know, yeah, I know.
He should have been there, too, don't you think? I think
we're not,
perfect.
We're not going to talk about Michael Jackson on this show. I'm sorry, but we're...
Yeah, he was found innocent, Bruce. Now, come on now. But anyway, I mean, I thought that would have been a perfect threesome to guide those guys through that tacky house.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that, but it is. It's just dreadful. But nonetheless,
truth is truth, regardless of how well it is. And actually, just to inform you a little bit about this, Jim, Tony Snow apparently wore some gold-rimmed plastic sunglasses while he was there as well. So, you know, it was just a resounding success all the way around.
Très chic.
Thanks for joining us today, Jim. I got to get on to a break and then to our guest a little bit later, but I really appreciate you calling, man.
Hey, thank you very much, and it's always a pleasure. You have a good weekend.
I certainly will. You do the same now.
I'll try.
Okay. And that was our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere in the northern hemisphere, or somewhere in North America. We'll narrow it down to North America, to the North American continent. Right, it's about 29, almost. We're almost at the bottom of the hour. You know, if you are interested in checking out this website before we go over to our next guest, go to knowthyneighbor.org and check that out. You can also go to eqfl.org and check that out. You are listening to the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America. And we're right here on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, probably need to send me an email at this point. We're going to do some interviews and extended conversations, then we'll be back. Going to take a quick break. We'll be back with our guest.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. With the Supreme Court's Guantanamo decision, Bush and company have now been put on notice. Their way of doing things has got to stop. At Guantanamo, the Supreme Court prohibited Rumsfeld from holding military trials without prior congressional authorization, and beyond that, with substandard due process. Rumsfeld's tribunals were allowing in hearsay and even coerced testimony, and the court said no to all that. But the court's decision goes way beyond the gates of Guantanamo, for it now casts into doubt a whole range of unsavory practices that this administration has been engaging in. This includes mistreating and torturing and killing detainees. Yeah, the U.S. has killed more than two dozen of them. This includes the transfer of detainees to countries that practice torture. And this includes the CIA's own secret prisons, where hundreds of detainees are being kept without access to any court, reportedly for the rest of their lives. None of that's kosher, implied John Paul Stevens in his majority opinion. He cited Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions as a governing authority. That article says people should, in all circumstances, be treated humanely. It bans outrages upon personal dignity, in particular humiliating and degrading treatment of detainees. And it talks about judicial guarantees, which are recognized as indispensable by civilized peoples. Those are just the guarantees that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld have been repeatedly violating. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
The major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing. Have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'd be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Even better, burn the CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better. To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
I can feel no sense of measure, no illusions as we take refuge in young man's pleasure, breaking down the dreams we make real.
And you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm learning this whole thing about guests. I'm learning. It's okay though. We don't have our guests yet, but we will continue rocking on with the news of the day. Jim mentioned this whole thing about Bush taking Koizumi to Graceland, and I read the whole story in the break, and quite honestly, it doesn't interest me at all. the entire story doesn't interest me at all. But what does interest me is a story that is coming out via the Associated Press about Verizon and Bell South. And apparently USA Today came out today and said it could not confirm that Bell South or Verizon Communications had entered into a contract with the NSA, the National Security Agency. USA Today reported that the two companies were contracted to provide the agency with calling records of their customers. The report of the inability to confirm the contracts was reported by the Associated Press today. And according to this article, Gannett Companies, USA Today acknowledged in a note to our readers Friday that it could not establish that Bell South Corporation or Verizon Communications Incorporated contracted with the NSA to provide it with customer calling records. But spokesman Steve Anderson said this is an important story that holds up well. At the heart of our report is the fact that NSA is collecting phone call records of millions of Americans. What we address in the editor's note, he said, deals with the fact that we originally reported that the telephone companies were working under contract with the NSA. We've concluded that we cannot establish that Bell South or Verizon entered into a contract with the NSA to provide the bulk calling records. In an accompanying story, the newspaper reported Friday that lawmakers on House and Senate intelligence committees have said that while the NSA has amassed a huge database of calling records, cooperation with the NSA by telephone companies was not as extensive as USA Today initially reported on May 11th. Oh, thank you. Thank you so very much for letting me know that it's not as bad as you originally reported. I have Bell South as a provider. That kind of makes me a little bit happier about picking up the phone and calling, my buddies or whoever. But, nonetheless, why would they go out and put a story out if they can't confirm it? I don't get it. I just don't get it. And, of course, today we have the obligatory story of the U.S. combat commander suggesting that the U.S. Could lose the war in Iraq if public support for it at home is sapped by negative media coverage. Are you ready for this? Colonel Jeffrey Snow says, my personal opinion is that the only way we will lose this war is if we pull out prematurely. I would hope we get the time and support we need to finish this mission. Of course, he wasn't crying. That was me. Colonel Snow, whose own troops have come under stepped-up insurgent attacks this month, criticized media coverage as too focused on insurgent roadside. There's that word again, insurgent roadside bombings, kidnappings, and assassinations. Okay, you know what I'm going to do real quick? I'm going to very quickly count how many times the word insurgent is in this article. All right, we got one, we got two, and let's see, we got three. Looks like there's three. Four. Five insurgents in a four-paragraph article. Are they trying to drive home a point, do you think? I'm thinking that they probably do, they probably are. Now, of course, the story isn't that we could lose in Iraq due to negative media coverage, Commander Snow. The deal is that, you know, we are not, it was never intended for us to win in Iraq in any way, shape, or form. So the just and humane thing would be to get the hell out. Now, of course, my friend Jim from West Virginia says that we can't do it that way, but that's fine. We don't necessarily have to. I still think we need to get out of there pretty quickly, though. Apparently, my guest has either misplaced the number or has forgotten about the interview, which is fine. We'll just keep going. If you want to get in on the radio show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4 head on. You can also send me email to bruce@brucebirch.com. That's B-U-R-C-H. We'll get you right into my email box, and I can check out and see what you're talking about. I will mention at this point a little something about the winner of our little poll. And if you've been to brucebirch.com, you can see for yourself who won, but the word that won. And earlier in the week, I was talking about the religious right, and I asked for a one-word term that would describe, you know, the folks like the James Dobsons and the Jerry Falwells and Pat Robertsons, you know, the ones that like to demand, assassinations of political figures and tell everybody they're going to hell, and and tell the people who died in Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans that they deserved it. These are the kinds of people, folks. Not your neighbors who get up and go to church on Sunday morning. We're talking about the evil religious right. The number one term, if I had a drum roll, I would push a button and make it roll. The number one term, yes, was Christopo. C-H-R-I-S-T-A-P-O, Christopo. That garnered 50% of the vote, followed by Neo-Theocons, winning 38% of the vote, and right behind that, Biblicons, winning 13% of the vote. I will look up those folks who sent those suggestions to me and get you guys out a bumper sticker, a piece, or whatever I said I was going to give you. I'll give it to you. A little bit later on, I'll get that out, probably after the holiday. So don't look for it immediately, but probably toward the end of next week. If you did win, if you go to brucebirch.com and you're the one who won, drop me an email with your address, and we'll get it over to you. Okay, so when we're talking about the religious right from now on, we're going to be saying Christopo. Oh, my goodness. It's... I read some of these to you earlier, but, you know, I just find it to be funny that was the one that won. I really do. Because, you know, if it were up to Jerry Falwell, if it were up to Pat Robertson, if it were up to James Dobson, they would recreate the world to be exactly in their image, and we would be we would be marching lockstep to their religious beliefs. We would be marching lockstep to their ideas. We would be marching millions of men around the world would be exposing themselves in their showers to their sons because James Dobson says that's the way to keep them from becoming gay. Now, if you want to call me up and defend James Dobson for saying that, oh, my God. Yeah, give me a call, but we'll have a conversation, a real one. Perhaps we'll even give you the name of a good therapist where you are. All right. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break a little bit, a couple or a minute early. And see if we can't get a hold of this guest. I may have an ability to do that. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. You can also email me, bruce@brucebirch.com, same as it ever was. We'll be right back.
You may find yourself living the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Free America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. And our guest has joined us. Nadine Smith is back with us, and she is the Executive Director of Equality Florida. Nadine, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. And the first thing I wanted to ask you is very quickly, you know, about knowthyneighbor.org. I went and checked out the website a little while ago, but could you sort of give me a little bit of an in-depth explanation of what the site is about?
Well, I can tell you what I know about it. It began in Massachusetts, and it's been sponsored in Florida by a church in Jacksonville. And essentially it places the names of the folks who've signed on to the petition that would add to the 2008 ballot an anti-gay constitutional measure pertaining to marriage. And it allows people to search and see if their names show up on there fraudulently, which is a problem, a huge problem in Florida, and I suspect other parts of the country as well. And it also, I know how, I'll tell you how people are using it. I know people have looked themselves up to see if their names show up. They've looked to see if family members have shown up and co-workers, friends, that kind of thing. I heard about one woman in Jacksonville who saw her mother on the list and was really quite devastated to think that her mother would support something that would embed anti-gay discrimination in the Constitution. But she ended up, instead of, you know, just sort of you know, quietly being hurt and angry about it, she went and had a conversation with her mother and discovered that her mother actually thought she was signing something that supported marriage equality. So while some folks have cautioned that this is a tool to harass people, what we really are seeing is that it has been a tool for people to have real honest, heartfelt conversations with people close to them. And that's the spirit that we hope everyone will use it in.
Because that kind of spirit is what creates lasting change.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
As opposed to lifelong enemies. we already have enough of a divided discourse as it is, you know. I was looking through this and actually, you know, what I think is amazing to me is just how many. I mean, you know, it amazed, like how 450,000 people were in this list.
Yeah, more than that. You know, certainly there are going to be people who just signed it mindlessly.
Uh-huh.
There are going to be people who signed it because they were in church that day and wanted to avoid conflict and thought signing it was the path of least resistance. But the majority of people, I would say, sign it because it's an issue they haven't really thought about, and they certainly haven't thought about in human terms, in terms of the people whose lives are hurt, in terms of the ugly, ugly message that it sends to a broader society. Yes, there are far-right you know, people who wear ignorance like a badge of honor who sign that and are happy to have done so. But I think the vast majority of people are people who are reachable. And, you know, what we know from some of the research that we've done is most gay people don't talk to their friends and family and neighbors about how bigotry impacts their lives, how fear of being the victim of a hate crime changes how you live your life, how worry about whether the new manager is anti-gay, you know, impacts how you know, there's a certain part of your brain that is always alert to how this can do you harm. And so I think one of the things that we do to defend ourselves is we tend not to talk about the ways that we are vulnerable to the people around us. But in not talking about those things, we also don't invite straight allies into this fight. And I'll give you one example. We did focus groups with people who knew gay people, straight people who knew gay people, and many of them did not believe that Florida has an outright ban. If you are gay, you cannot adopt. It doesn't matter if your brother and sister-in-law want you to adopt your niece or nephew if something were to happen to them. The state of Florida says, nope, you can't do that. It doesn't matter if you are the non-biological parent having raised a child from birth to till their high school years, the state of Florida says you must always remain a legal stranger to your own child. That's the law in Florida. But many of the straight people in this focus group didn't believe it, and they didn't believe it because they had a gay friend who adopted. But that gay friend never told them that they established residency in another state or had to go overseas, never told them all of the expensive, incredible hoops they had to jump through in order to give a child who otherwise would not be taken care of a permanent home. And so they sat in this focus group saying, well, that can't be true. That can't possibly be true. Or this gay person I know would have told me that. But when we talked to gay people and we said, why don't you talk to your straight friends and family about how they can help, they said, if they should already know. This is so pervasive, they should even know how it harms us. And if they really cared, they'd ask. So in a way, there's a don't ask, don't tell policy that stops straight people from feeling the moral obligation to stand up for the gay people in their lives who are being harmed daily.
Tell me a little bit about your organization, Equality Florida. Now, I noticed on your website that one of the things you're working on is overturning the anti-gay adoption ban. What are some of the other things you guys are working on?
Well, one of our priorities has been safe schools. Anyone who has children in the school system or is a product of a public school system certainly knows what a problem bullying is. And it is a problem that is getting worse because the ways that people deal with bullying and defend themselves from bullying keep getting more and more extreme. It's not a fist fight after school. It's a gun in the locker. And so What we also know about bullying is the most pervasive kind of bullying, and the kind of bullying that is least likely to cause administrators or a teacher to intervene is anti-gay harassment, or harassment that's based on gender identity. Someone who doesn't conform to gender stereotypes. And so it's not just that gay kids are being singled out and harassed. It is that the weapon of choice, if you want to humiliate, stigmatize, isolate, threaten someone, is to use anti-gay harassment. And I believe we see the corollary in hate crimes, where here in Florida, for example, we've seen hate crimes increase dramatically, 33% for consecutive reporting cycles in the most violent categories directed towards gay people. And
wow.
That's at a time when this anti-gay organizing, in terms of this anti-gay, anti-marriage constitutional measure, but also Florida's ground zero in the battle of these so-called ex-gay ministries. They're headquartered here in Florida, the Liberty Council, yep. Exodus International, all of these groups. The right wing has invested heavily in Florida for a number of years. They've understood it to be a critical swing state. And when all of us were paying attention at the national level and we weren't watching what was happening in our state capitals, they consolidated power. They ran stealth candidates. They invested. And so they are, they're seeing the benefits of all of that. And we've got to be just as dedicated to doing the work at the state and local level. And so in addition to the adoption ban and working really hard to make schools safe, again, we have to pay attention to what's happening on hate crimes and insist that hate violence against gay people that is intended to intimidate and silence us has to be taken seriously. And right now, it's not being taken seriously enough. We work a lot with local organizations when they're working to pass human rights ordinances or when they're, for example, when I talk about Exodus International and those organizations, they're not just content to target adults who have grown up in an atmosphere that is extraordinarily anti-gay and are dealing with the repercussions of all of that homophobia. This sort of suppression therapy, which is really religious proselytizing masquerading as science, has been utterly debunked by every reputable mental health, medical, psychological, and child welfare organization. There's a great pamphlet called Just the Facts that a coalition of all of these reputable organizations have put together saying that there's no science to back this, and in fact, the effect of telling people that happiness lies in suppressing and repressing your sexual orientation is actually quite dangerous and can, in fact, lead to suicide. So
sure.
We do a lot of work. So the issues of safe schools and the issues of hate crime and the issues of teen suicide, all of these things are very much linked.
Very quickly, we're right at the top of our hour, but very quickly, how can folks get involved and how can they donate to your
organization? Our website. We hope they'll do both. Everyone's got family in Florida, and please, if you don't live in Florida, contact your family in Florida. But they can go to our website, which is equalityflorida.org. Equalityflorida.org. Go there; you can find out more about us, and with a click of a button, you can make a secure contribution to continue the work that we do here.
Well, thank you so much, Nadine Smith, for joining me, and. And I definitely will try to get back with you and get you back on the program again as things develop down there. And keep us in mind if you have press releases you want to get out there.
I sure will. We're going to face this marriage battle in 2008, and we're really going to need folks standing with us. And so we hope everyone in your listening audience will do just that. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, thank you for joining me today. This was Nadine Smith of Equality Florida. And thanks for joining me. We'll get back again real soon. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Free America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. In Baghdad, the U.S. Army is investigating the deaths of four Iraqi civilians in a town south of Baghdad in March. The criminal investigation of five soldiers began after two U.S. soldiers reported alleged coalition involvement in the family's deaths. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli airstrikes continued today. More than 30 targets have been hit. Israel has been increasing the pressure on the Hamas government to free an Israeli soldier who was kidnapped earlier this week in a cross-border raid. Israel has also kidnapped and arrested eight cabinet members and 50 other Hamas officials. The United States is insisting that Iran respond to the Western incentives offer to halt its nuclear program by the G8-imposed deadline next week. Iranian officials, however, insist that they need more time to reply. In Washington, Congress will help President Bush find a way to handle the suspected terrorist detainees at Guantanamo Bay. This follows yesterday's Supreme Court decision that the Bush administration has overstepped its constitutional authority regarding military tribunals for the 450 Guantanamo Bay prisoners. USA Today reports that the NSA phone call database is not as widespread as first reported last month. Today, the newspaper said that Verizon and Bell South deny that they provided customer phone records to the National Security Agency, as the paper had earlier claimed. In Washington, it's down to the wire to see if the Bush administration will meet its goal of placing 2,500 National Guardsmen on the U.S.-Mexico border by today's scheduled deadline. Reports from military officials in the four states say that fewer than 1,000 troops are in place. However, the National Guard head insists that the goal would be met by today, and he disputes that tally. In New York City, the former police commissioner and one-time nominee for the Homeland Security chief has pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor charges of accepting tens of thousands of dollars in gifts while he was in charge. The deal that Bernard Carrick reached avoids jail time and punishes him with more than $220,000 in fines. In Kuwait, the parliamentary election results show that no woman won any seat. It's the first time that women were given the right to vote and run for office. In Memphis, Tennessee today, President Bush and the First Lady took visiting Japanese Prime Minister to Elvis Presley's home in Graceland. He is said to be a big fan of the rock and roll legend. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
In Paris, French lawmakers approved legislation that could weaken Apple's hold on the online music market. The law would force Apple to make its iPod music player and iTunes online music store compatible with rival services. Apple Computer revealed irregularities related to stock options that its chief executive, Steve Jobs, received between 1997 and 2001. More than 60 companies have announced that they are reviewing their stock option grant policies that many of their executives receive. The Commerce Department reports that consumer spending slowed in May. The government report cites rising gasoline prices as the reason for the slowdown. However, the University of Michigan's survey of consumer sentiment shows an increase in June. JetBlue is the favorite low-cost airline carrier among travelers, according to a new J.D. Power and Associates survey. Continental Airlines was ranked the best full-service carrier. Billionaire Kirk Kerkorian, who is one of the largest investors in GM, wants the Detroit automaker to consider a three-way partnership with Nissan and Renault. Under the proposal, the two automakers would purchase a minority stake in GM. Light sweet crude settled at $73.93 a barrel today, and at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 41 points, the Nasdaq was down 2, and the S&P 500 down 3. There's always more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dram. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour.
time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome back to Radio for a Free America. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program, and I am Bruce Birch. Glad to be back with you here at the second hour of the radio program. We are being brought to you by the Head On Radio Network and also through the Head On Radio Network by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Thanks, guys, for all you do. On the line with us presently, we have Lieutenant Commander Charles D. Swift. He is assigned as a defense counsel in the Office of the Chief Defense Counsel in the Department of Defense Office of Military Commissions as a defense counsel and is detailed to represent Salim Ahmed Hamdan, who is a citizen of Yemen. Lieutenant Commander Swift has testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee regarding the lawfulness of military commissions. Lieutenant Commander Swift is one of the 2005 recipients of the Medal of Liberty from the American Civil Liberties Union and selected as runner-up for Lawyer of the Year by National Law Journal and has been named as one of the 100 most influential lawyers in America for his work on Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. Lieutenant Commander Swift, welcome to the Bruce Birch Radio Program.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. I thought it was amazing that I was able to get a hold of you, but I'm really excited to have you on the show. Mainly because of what happened yesterday. Now, just, you know, everybody in the world has heard probably what happened yesterday, but real briefly, if you could you tell us exactly what the ruling was yesterday?
Sure. The petition that we brought to the Supreme Court, Professor Ketiel and myself on behalf of Mr. Hamdan, is fairly complex, but I'll break it down. The court ruled basically, in its most fundamental, that the military commissions that the president had ordered and later convened after 9/11 violated the Constitution and were illegal in their form. They also found that the crime that had been brought to the military commissions was not a war crime and therefore could not be tried, even if they changed the form of the commissions.
Wow. So that's a pretty significant ruling.
It's been hailed by already by legal scholars as probably landmark. The court takes on its probably most important role in the separation of powers during time of war, because this is where the president rises to the zenith of his powers. As commander-in-chief, those powers are the highest that the president has. And the Supreme Court has looked at those powers, starting with the Civil War, going on into World War I, World War II, and now during the Korean War, during the Vietnam War, and now in the middle of what's been deemed the War on Terror. And Hamdan v. Rumsfeld looks directly at those powers, because the president's power to convene a separate justice system has been looked at six different times now by the Supreme Court, and under his commander-in-chief powers, and it's 3-3. On three times they found that he could do it, and on three times they found that he couldn't do it, yesterday being one of those times. It's particularly relevant here in what's been deemed the War on Terror, because this war is different than any other war that we've ever been involved in, because there's no defined enemy. And there's no defined end. And by that I mean when we start a war, you don't know when it's going to end, but you do know what victory will look like. And historically, you've known who you're at war with. In this particular case, we're more at war with a tactic than with any particular group or individuals, as we can already see. Now, if it started against Al-Qaeda, then the latest the way that it now shows itself is different than what we had originally started again.
Sure.
Most people don't think Osama bin Laden's really even in charge anymore, that there are these other groups, whether it's an al-Qaeda in Iraq or new cells springing up all over the place. And so the real concern in that, not only in that it presents a problem to security, but it's very difficult to define where the president's powers begin and end. And, you know, military commissions represent really the far end of presidential power, but if you want to think about it, because it's the president moving into an area that is almost all the other time exclusively the area of Congress and the judiciary. Congress writes laws, and the judiciary decides whether they've been violated or not. Here, the president said, I can write the laws, and I'll decide whether they've been violated. So, you know, this is all the power of government coming into one individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, the court pushed back yesterday. It says, no, we're going to use recognized congressional statutes, and we're going to, in this particular case, hold the president to the traditional norms of military justice or civil justice. It also, on an international stage, did something very important. One of the great changes to the Geneva Conventions occurred after World War II, because one of the problems was undefined people.
Right.
What
protections
would apply? And, you know, there were a lot of issues with that. So they passed what was called Common Article 3. And Common Article 3 assigned minimum treatment. It said that you would not do things like torture. You would not kill. You would not engage in humiliating or degrading treatment of the enemy. That, you know, it set a basic humanitarian threshold that you had to get over. Now, the administration took the position at the beginning of the Afghan War that Common Article 3 did not apply to al-Qaeda. That was really a stunning position, because we had never taken that position before. During Vietnam, we accorded those protections to the Viet Cong, for instance, who didn't do all of the same things. They didn't wear uniforms. They blended in the civilian population, et cetera. But we committed ourselves to humane treatment. And so we never said before that we weren't going to follow the Geneva Convention and that we could move outside of it. So the court, you know, one of the really important things that the court said was, no, Common Article 3 does apply. We interpret treaties, and it's our job, because treaties are the law of the land of the United States, to make the ultimate determination of these treaties, not the President of the United States. Again, because if the President has the power to both interpret a treaty, you know, sign the treaty, enforce the treaty, and then interpret what the treaty means whatever the President says it means. And that really makes the law in some ways meaningless. And they went on to say that Article 3 required a regular trial, and they recognized that the military trials that everyone is familiar with, the court-martial, which, you know, has been used at Abu Ghraib and may well be used at Hadith and other places, is a regular trial. And I totally agree with that. I've worked in military justice for most of my adult life. And I'm very proud of it. But the military commissions that they convened were not regular trials. They weren't representative of military justice, and that was, I think, the most important thing, that they brought us back to meeting or enforce what the rest of the world has been saying, that these need to meet the minimum humanitarian criteria. And, of course, no one had ever questioned that a U.S. trial could do that. U.S. trial.
Right.
So, now, for me, one of the things when I got involved in this was that the human rights revolution of the world, we have benefit from. We led that. After World War II, we were our nation, more than any other nation, was responsible for the idea of human rights. We first really put it forward with the Declaration of Independence, and after World War II, we extended that beyond limited classes of people. The civil rights movement begot South Africa. Our rights brought democracy to European areas. It won the Cold War. And this seems like a huge step backwards. And, as I said on the step, what the court really did was say that fear was not going to define our values. And to me, that was a huge step in winning the war on terror.
Lieutenant Commander Swift, one of the questions that I would have for you about this is, thank you. First of all, let me just say that you're, thank you for all the work that you've done in this case. I mean, you really sort of have presented or defended the Republic, if you would like to term it that way. So thank you for doing that. But I'd also like to ask you about.
But I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I'd also want to ask you a little bit about what those courts that were set up, what they were like. I mean, I read a little bit about them, but not a tremendous amount. What was the atmosphere, and was it fair? Was it in any way just at all?
Well, they were fundamentally flawed for all the well intentions that went into them. There were some fundamental flaws. That was probably best epitomized when they were in a news conference early on, when the then chief prosecutor, Colonel Fred Bork, said to the media, these trials will be fair because of the men and women involved in them. And it struck me at that moment that we were in real trouble, not because people wouldn't want to be fair, but because our founding fathers had recognized that the key was that we were a government of laws, not of men.
Right.
No matter how well-intentioned you were, the key to protecting the rights of individuals is the law, not the discretion of men. Really, that is what our trial system is. It's the imposition of the law. We use men and women to do it. But there are basic foundations on which they do it. And that was perhaps the most frustrating part as a military attorney, as an attorney working in them, and understanding how they wouldn't stand the test of time. What you had was the rules were constantly shifting. They had no way, and in fact, they had been so, in trying to rush and coddle together something, create some brand new system of justice, the rules were horribly incomplete. Now, if you trash 200 years of both military and civil justice and everything we've done and feel that a few people in a room can come up with the rules, I think you have another thing coming. It's incredibly disrespectful to all the work that went before. So you found yourself in a position where you either did not know the rules or the rules were not fixed at all. And throughout the process, the rules changed. The next incredibly frustrating part was that while it was an adversary system, the essential guarantees and the beauty of the adversary system in finding the truth was totally taken away. That these trials were given a dual purpose, but one purpose that sat at the absolute zenith of it. It wasn't to protect the rights of the individual and only convict those who were guilty. The actual purpose was to protect national security. Now, I'm all for protecting national security, but what came is any time you said, well, this is national security, that excuse could be used to kick the accused out of the courtroom at any time, not let the defense see evidence, not let the defense discover evidence, to put in a statement that was unsigned. How do I know this was actually taken? That's national security. In other words, the trial was coming down to, we're from the government, you have to trust us.
Oh, my God.
Trials are not about trust us. To be about justice, they have to be a challenge of that trust and earn it. This one was, you just need to trust us, we have the evidence. And, they would not go that far to say, but then the evidence they had, I don't have to put that on. Who was the translator? I'll call the FBI agent. Well, did the FBI agent speak Arabic? No. Well, can we call the translator? No. How do we know the translator even spoke Arabic? because some of the translators working in the commissions couldn't do it. They would hire these people, and they were unable to do the job. So how do we know the qualifications? Well, trust us, they were qualified.
Oh, my goodness. So,
Lieutenant, what we found ourselves in was a system where, and what probably bothered me the most, was we would stand in there and say, these people, you know, they're presumed to be innocent. Okay? So they're presumed not to be a terrorist, right? Presumed not to be a terrorist, so we get all the rights of a regular individual. No, they're terrorists. They don't get any rights. Well, what happened to them being presumed not to be? Well, they're presumed not to be, and we'll have a trial and prove they are. Well, then I want my right. No. So it was, I saw a cartoon very early on that basically summed it up. Asking government official, he says, terrorists should be tried by military commission. Well, how do you know they're terrorists till they have a trial? Why else would they be at a military commission? Isn't that circular logic? Now you're getting to methods. And, the justice system that we as Americans value had been fundamentally flawed. And the problem to me, the United States, as well as the United States can never be expected to be liked by everyone in the world. That would be an unrealistic goal. People are always going to dislike you. Some will like you, some won't. What my father told me was that I shouldn't try and be liked, I should try and be respected. And that one of the things to be respected was to be fair. People wouldn't mind so much if I was tough, or whether I was gregarious, or whatever I was. He said, if you're fair, people will respect that. And I think the same is true for nations. And we're not going to be liked by everybody, but, if we're fair, then we'll be respected. And our justice system is one of those things because it is considered, by and large, to be fair. No one's saying it's perfect, but it's it is considered to be fair to the best that any justice system can be. And, because that's such a strength for us in our respect, to give it up, to hold a system that is not perceived as fair, is an incredible loss in the war on terror. Because this is ultimately a battle, much like the Cold War, for hearts and minds. And we, at the beginning of the Cold War, let's look back at the history, a lot of fear governed it, and we reacted in some ways that probably weren't keeping with our values. The longer we stayed in it, the more we got true to our values. And our values won, because ultimately the other side couldn't recruit anybody. They didn't want to play anymore. And that's how we'll win this time. We'll win because they can't recruit anybody, because when our values are held up to some organization like Al-Qaeda's values, it's not even close. And, that's what we want, is by staying true to our values that we'll win this. And I'm confident, actually, we can't lose it as long as we stay true to our values.
So how Lieutenant Commander Swift, how does this process go forward at this point?
Well, the President had said before that he, was waiting for the Supreme Court to give him direction. Well, I think, no matter where you come down on this, you have to say that the Supreme Court has given him direction. They certainly have given him direction on how to proceed for trials for Guantanamo Bay. And the President's also indicated that he wants to have trials and that we need to move forward. And I'm there. The Supreme Court's given him direction. If we want to charge a crime like conspiracy, which is one of the crimes, and that's a U.S. crime. It's not an international crime. It's ours, but it's certainly we have the right to punish in our courts those who would conspire to do us harm. And our federal courts are opening, functioning, and in fact, they've already tried upwards of 100 people, and the system seems to be working pretty well. People have been convicted. Some people have been acquitted, which is a sign of a healthy system. It's working fine. And if they want to bring conspiracy charges to those courts, I'm sure they'll hear it tomorrow. And one is somewhat, you know, on Padilla. You know, we can't try him in a federal court. We can't do these things. We compromise national security. And all of a sudden, we can. Now, that may be because, you know, time's passed and the evidence isn't nearly as sensitive as it once was. But that was same things would be true for Guantanamo Bay. Any concern you had at the beginning, time's passed. Now, to hold that some of this information is still essential 5 years later is just not really realistic. And it, I think that the federal court should be the courts of choice. Now, the other choice is using the military justice system. And the court was quite clear. For war crimes, battlefield crimes, Afghanistan is a battlefield and was a battlefield. For those crimes that are battle recognized, like, you know, attacking medical personnel, destroying churches, attacking news media, those types of crimes, that they can and should be, you know, they should be tried in military court. And the military should also police the battlefield. And that, well, that's different than charging conspiracy trials, which are domestic crimes, but that both are available, and we would use the regular procedures of our courts to try these people. If we're going to hold them responsible for our laws, then we will use, then we'll remain true to our laws at the same time.
Lieutenant Commander Smith, Swift, I've got to take a quick break. Can you hold on? And there's a couple more questions I wanted to ask you, if you have the time.
No, certainly I'll hang on for a few more minutes, and then we can wrap it up.
Okay. All right, great, great. Glad to have you with me. I've got Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who is involved in the Hamdan case that was decided yesterday by the Supreme Court. And we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program right here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org. We're watching what happens when the lovers of violence do their thing. I'm talking about the Israeli government and those among the Palestinians who seek by bloody means to achieve their ends. For more than a year now, Hamas had honored its unilateral ceasefire, then provoked by Israel even as it was coming around to acknowledging a two-state solution. Hamas and other Palestinian groups responded in kind. This was precisely what the Israeli government desired, since it doesn't want a decent and a just and a fair resolution to the conflict. Every time Palestinians seem to move a step closer, Israel slaps them back farther. And so Palestinians played right into Olmert's hands by kidnapping the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit and by kidnapping and then executing Israeli settler Eliyahu Asheri. These are abominable acts. Israel, for its part, never misses an opportunity to overreact. It has seized 8 Palestinian ministers and 64 members of the Palestinian parliament. Israel's subtle way of saying, you're not even close to being an independent country. On top of that, Israel is devastating the civilian infrastructure of Gaza, bombing bridges and knocking out electrical grids. This is collective punishment, outlawed by the Geneva Conventions, but perfectly in keeping with Israeli practice. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I've seen you in the markets, I've seen you in the streets, and at your political conventions, talking talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mine. I just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb?
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Free America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. We are talking presently with Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who is please correct me if I'm wrong. You are the second chair in this, in the defense of Hamdan, correct?
Well, in the federal court, yes. In the military court, I'm the lead attorney.
Okay, in the military career,
you know,
okay.
Professor Cattell and I kind of split it up. And principally, I handle the military issues. He handles the constitutional and civil issues.
Okay.
And
you guys have done a fantastic job, you know. I wanted to ask you about there's a law that was enacted last year that basically... it's called the Detainees Treatment Act of 2005.
Yes. Detainees Treatment Act of 2005.
This apparently denied detainees the right to avail themselves of any federal court. So does the Supreme Court decision then overturn this as well?
Well, it certainly did as far as Hamdan went. Found that because Hamdan's suit had been brought beforehand, that they had not been stripped of jurisdiction. The court interpreted the statute as not stripping them of jurisdiction. It was, you know, the first version of it in the Senate explicitly did so. The second version was was not clear, really. It was hastily written legislation, and it had, you know, structurally, it was difficult to interpret. But the court ultimately came to the conclusion that it had not stripped them of jurisdiction, and that stripping habeas jurisdiction had to be very clear. The court, you know, five justices were absolutely clear on that. That was the reason, the principal reason for Justice Scalia's dissent. He disagreed with that and said that, no, that it should have stripped, and they should have heard this later. But notwithstanding that, the five members of it found. Commentators think that it probably means, and certainly Justice Scalia did. Justice Scalia was worried that because of the court's decision that all of the detainee cases that have been filed habeas regarding, for instance, how detainees that were being held not even without a trial and weren't going to be charged would be that those lawsuits were still alive. And he certainly felt, Justice Scalia certainly felt they were by virtue of the court's decision yesterday. You know, that'll be for the D.C. Court of Appeals to decide. It's really not part of the case that we were involved in directly on the legality of the types of trial.
Apparently also... Currently in the Senate, there are some senators who are working on a way to try to make a legal, I guess, another sort of set of military tribunals that would be legal. Do you have any knowledge of this at all?
Oh, sure. Yes. You know, obviously, there again, I testified, as indicated earlier, about the last set of hearings that were held by Senator Specter. I was invited to testify by his office at it. And
okay.
They are again indicating they're going to have hearings and revisit this issue after the Supreme Court has legislated. Yeah, I hope that we're very, very cautious. I have to say I've got Mr. Hamdan's interest here, but I'd also say that we should be very, very cautious. And this may be a good way to think about it. All of this is not unprecedented. It's all happened before. In particular, what I'm going to draw us back is to the days after the Civil War.
Okay.
That's probably when military commissions were used the most.
Mm-hmm.
And military commissions under that case were used, you know, after the Civil War, over presidential objection. And at the time, this was the principal reason that they tried to, that Johnson was brought up on impeachment articles was that the North desired to punish the South. And, you know, they began Reconstruction. Now, there were a lot of good things in Reconstruction. We needed to get over slavery. And commissions were deemed as necessary to get rid of a terrorist element. The particular problem was a group called the Knights of the White Magnolia. And I'm not sure if your listeners are probably familiar with that group eventually became, the KKK.
Sure.
Now, you know, I think all of us can agree that the KKK was not a good thing, that they were also a terrorist organization. The
sure.
problem with the military commissions that were used there was that they were not perceived as the South as bringing justice. And they were perceived, you know, by the people who, you know, were living in the South as part of the punishment against them. And ultimately, it made the KKK, instead of stamping it out, it made them more popular. And their methodology got even more violent. And, you know, they grew and were able to bring in members. So instead of curing the problems that were sought out to be done, the idea that we would just go to an extremely harsh form of military law, that the situation required it, that we were going to strip the defendants of all their rights, and we were going to, by gosh, you know, put down this terrible terrorist organization, which it was, ended up backfiring. Reconstruction ended, and instead of having the South reconciliated with the North, you had terrible racial problems. You had a South and North that were terribly divided. And, you know, it would take 100 years to get over it, and the country still bears scars of all of this. So the question is, do we want to make the mistakes again? Now, we have to understand that al-Qaeda represents something like 0.01% of the Islamic world. And the rest of the 99.99% is up for grabs. But if it's perceived that, you know, the Islamic world is being treated unequally by the United States, we're not going to be the ones who win their hearts and minds. So we need to think hard about what history teaches us before we go in and start messing with the rules, especially when we've got two systems of justice, both of which work incredibly well, have the benefit of saying, well, you know, this is how we're punishing our people, so, you know, subjecting you to it is not victor's justice. And we have a much greater chance of having our actions match our words. And that's how we're going to win people over, as I said. So I really hope I'm giving, you know, I'm certainly going to try and get my input into this, but I really hope that we think very carefully about whether we want to scrap a system of military justice that has worked well, is conceived as fair, and start yet again instead of going back. Because, you know, if they decided to do a court-martial or federal civil trials, we could start tomorrow. We don't have to rewrite all of this. We can start tomorrow. Both are.
Sure.
And, you know, and I personally believe that it is high time we started. I feel tremendously for the victims of 9/11, their families. I believe they deserve justice. And that's justice that's regular, normal, and they can see. And, you know, it's not revenge, it's justice. And that's what their families deserve.
You're absolutely right. I just, you know, I also, the other thing about this, too, that I wanted to ask you about is, what does this, I mean, you know, as far as the future of military detentions, is this does this ruling affect any of the detentions that have happened down there, or is this going to release anyone, or?
No, it doesn't release anyone, and I think that's important. What it does, you know, the president has indicated that he's committed to moving Guantanamo forward, and, you know, that's important. What it does is show the way to move forward, the way to move forward to fair trials. And it also, if it has an implication, that implication is in Common Article 3, that there will be no cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment of individuals who are in detention. And, you know, I think that's extraordinarily important, too. As a military officer, I can tell you that, hey, 99.9% of military members are honorable. They do the right thing every day. unfortunately, things like apple grape happen. And, you know, we move swiftly, we punish people for that, and that's important. But when we say that we're not committed to ensuring that nothing inhumane or degrading happens to these individuals, then, you know, we put a specter out there in the world that apple grape is the norm, not the exception. And I think that part of it, that common article 3 applies to this, and that treatment cannot be inhumane or degrading, or, is essential to, again, having us win the battle of hearts and minds, and to really reflect what our values are.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
That way is not American. It's, you know, it's not how we function, and when it happens, we should stamp it out, and we should proudly declare that that's who we are. And we're not going to do these things, and when they're done, they're illegal and they're wrong. We can't be perfect, but we can, you know, again, recommit ourselves to the law and that no one's above it.
Lieutenant Commander Swift, thank you so much for joining me today on the radio program, and I certainly hope that as things develop in this case later down the road that we can get you back on the air and we can have another conversation about it.
No problem. Have a great day. Bye now.
Okay. You too. And that was Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who is the lead military counsel for Amzi Hamdan, whose case went through the Supreme Court and was ruled on yesterday that, you know, these military tribunals are basically not acceptable under the eyes of the Geneva Conventions and the U.S. law. We're going to go ahead and take a very quick break, maybe a couple minutes, and then come back, and I think we may have a caller or two on the line. But we want to try to get those in before we leave the program for this week. So let's go ahead and take our quick break. You're listening to Bruce Burt's radio program right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next. That's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right. It's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
from the Bruce Birch Radio Program here on the Head On Radio Network. What a wonderful interview that was. Wow. That blew me away. And certainly look forward to talking to him again as the situation with military tribunals goes forward. This is a guy that will be definitely on the short list of people I'm going to call to find out what's going on. I do think we have a caller on the line, our good friend Bob from North Dakota. Are you there, Bob?
Hello, Bruce.
How are you doing, my friend?
Yes, my friend, yes. Not a good friend, just a friend, okay? And when you introduce me to the audience, just say, this is my friend from North Dakota. But you had a gentleman on there just a moment ago that, goodness, that was a man speaking the truth. He had nothing to hide. He was trying to lay it out there for everybody. And a gentleman that I would say is the first caller that you've talked to that is worthy to be called a head-on network, goodness, truth talker, truth teller, a person that just came on and told it like it is. And thank you for it, Bruce. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening, but thank you for that compliment as well. I mean, he definitely had a great. I mean, it blew me away. I'm still sitting. I've got to go back and listen to it to catch everything.
Yeah, he laid out facts. He just did. He did the UCMJ. He did the United States Code. He did everything right. That's a gentleman and a truth teller, okay? And he told the truth. The whole truth, nothing but the truth. Bruce, I love to listen to him. And that gentleman is a true American hero.
It's a
commander in the United States Navy, huh?
I'm glad that we have him in the position that he's in.
Well, I'm glad that we have a few men. Few good men. Remember that one? A few good men?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. You can't handle the truth? Well, by golly, we can't handle the truth. Just tell us the truth. We're sick of lies. We're sick of Bush. We're sick of Bush lies. We're sick of this, this Supreme, the Supremes, you know, Diana Ross and the Supremes. We're sick of that. We're sick of the games. We're sick of games. We want the truth. But I gave a boat away today.
I'm sorry.
Huh?
You did what now?
I gave a boat away today to a gentleman that enjoyed it. And I gave a boat, and, one of them, kind of a boat you can take out on a lake and go fishing in. I gave it to a gentleman. It's just a piece of junk to us. But, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. I told
that's,
my son
that's
that.
True.
Yeah, I told him, I said, hey, it's just a piece of trash to us, but, and this gentleman, he was kind of a scruffy old boy, but goodness gracious, you'd have thought I gave him the keys to the Queen Mary when he saw that thing. I thought, okay, take it. Yeah, have fun with it. But, you know, it's the truth. And, you know, Bruce, I've enjoyed you. I've enjoyed your show since you got it on the air. But I have never enjoyed 1 minute, not 1 second, of Head On Network like I have this afternoon. Thank you. Thank you.
That's very kind. That's tall. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you, because you brought the
gentleman. You're welcome.
You brought the gentleman to my ear, and I pray to God that every American can listen to what he had to say, because he told the truth, and my goodness, I have stood beside combatants in a bad place, but this man had nothing but facts. He talked about people being kept in bondage, being tortured, but he didn't say that. But they are, because whenever you take a man from his family for any reason and lock him away in a cage, you torture him because you're torturing him, because you're taking him away from his loved ones. And so whatever's going on in Guantanamo Bay is torture. He didn't say it, but if you take a man from, hey, Bruce, if I took you out of your house, dragged you down the block, stuck you in a cell, in a small cell, and kept you there for years on end with no contact with your family, what would you call that?
Torture.
Yes. And if you take a man from his family, you break his heart, you break his spirit, you steal from him that which is not yours. And, you know, this young lieutenant commander didn't say that it was torture. But it is torture if we keep people away that have no, we have no reason, we have no business keeping them there. It is torture. And I'm going to say this. Guantanamo Bay is a concentration camp where we concentrate people. And they're not enemies. They're not, you know, a terror. See, this is the problem with me, okay? Terrorism is a tactic. It is not an enemy. Purely, it is not an enemy. Terrorism is a tactic. It's something you do to frighten people. It's kind of like what Bush does to all the people of America. He terrorizes us. So who is the supreme terrorist of the United States? George W. Bush is the supreme terrorist. He terrorizes people every day. He gets on, he shows up and he talks about that. I hate him when he gets on aircraft carrier with his codpiece to frighten us and make all them Republican women swoon. But he frightens me, you know. He frightens me because he is no different than Adolf Hitler. Nothing is different from George W. Bush and Adolf Hitler, except maybe a couple of chromosomes. Period. That's what I'm calling him. Adolf Bush. I'm calling him that. No, not you, Bruce. No, you didn't say it, but Bush is a terrorist. He is a supreme commander of terrorists, and people that follow him are followers of a terrorizer. Him, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Dracula's little buddy Rumsfeld.
Yeah, that's, and then there's that Michael Chertoff guy who looks like he's a werewolf or something. I don't know.
You see it too, don't you? These people are undead. They shouldn't be here on this planet because they're terrorizing us all. But you gotta close this thing out, and I love you, boy. I really do. And this lieutenant commander, oh my goodness, that was a man that I would be proud to serve with and under at any time in any Navy, in any nation on this planet. But I would not be proud to serve with him right now in the United States Navy, the United States Army, the United States Air Force, or the United States Marine Corps, which I am a proud member of, the United States Marine Corps, because at least I left with my pride, my respect of country, my respect of nation, and the respect of the people that sent me to do what they sent me to do. But I have never, and I would not serve under Reagan, Bush 1, or Bush 2, but I would be proud to even serve under, what was that guy's name with the blue dress and all that stuff? Bill Clinton. I would be proud to shake Bill Clinton's hand and say to him, sir, and I respect you. Not because you were the best president we ever had, but at least you were the president of the United States, and you were not a fall guy or a go-between for the corporations, like Reagan and Bush 1 and Bush 2. They are just corporate sponsors of terrorism. And the corporations are messing up our nation. And it's time...
They certainly are.
It's time we tell Walmart, I don't need your Walmart products.